Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Emergency rules adopted in Oregon due to excessive heat. What happened at a Burger King in Nebraska? Voter suppression and the Texas timeout. And today on the show, the latest from the iron workers and the UAW. Welcome to the Wednesday, July 14th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. Wayne Cressup. It's going to be our first guest today. Wayne is a district rep for the Safety and Health Department of the Iron Workers. And he's been no stranger to the show, been on many, many times. In fact, I referenced this a couple of weeks ago. He, along with about 14 other people, were added as members of the Advisory Committee for Construction Safety and Health. This came out of the U.S. Department of Labor. And this is just another indication of how important safety and health, those two things, are to the Biden administration. They're paying very, very close attention to this. And Wayne will tell us about that position. I don't know if there's any meetings yet. I assume there are, but we'll find out shortly. Recently, the iron workers celebrated the bipartisan agreement on infrastructure. That was announced several weeks ago. They represent 128,000 construction and fabrication workers all across North America. And think about this. The iron workers, that's the first group that sees much of the infrastructure and how it's been crumbling. And more importantly, they have the skills to fix it. And this is posted on their website, ironworkers.org. The Biden administration has moved beyond these years of inaction and forged a bipartisan coalition to do so with a robust framework to fix many of the problems facing America's infrastructure system and put Americans to work in doing so, right? Its investment in roads, bridges, transit, water, and airports far eclipses previous infrastructure legislation and would lay the foundation for the next generation's economic well-being. We're also going to touch on an issue called rigor and signal person qualification. We're getting into the gobbledygook here, but I'm going to reference Wayne on that one. That's also posted on the website. So he's going to touch on all of that and more as our first guest. Desiree Hoffman will be joining us on behalf of the UAW, UAW.org. And I just mentioned a couple of weeks ago that they have a new president. Ray Curry was elected president on June 28th. He took over on the 1st of July. Rory Gamble was the interim president, and he retired at the end of June. We're going to touch on the American Jobs Plan and the American Families Plan. And one thing that's significant, you're going to hear a whole lot about this, especially starting tomorrow, the child care credit. And this is something that was part of the American Rescue Plan, where families who have children will get, starting tomorrow, $300 per child. So if you have four kids, you're looking at $1,200 a month. That's going to last a year, I believe. And there's been some talk that that might be extended. We'll hear from Desiree. We're also going to touch on drug pricing reform. And, you know, you need to know that the auto workers, going back, I want to say, post-World War II, this is the union that started employer-sponsored health care when they were negotiating contracts in the late 40s. And we wouldn't have what we have today if it wasn't for what the UAW started back then. Now, some are saying it's better to have Medicare for all. I understand that. But the auto workers, for a long time, have been on the forefront of protecting the health of their workers and their families. We're going to talk about drug pricing reform. Pharmaceutical companies have been claiming, and this has been going on for years, that the high price of prescription drugs is due in part to research. Well, okay, they do a little bit of research. Our government, which is funded by our tax dollars, does most of the research for drugs. And the researchers compared the cost of 20 most prescribed drugs and found that they cost an average of 59% more in the United States than other developed countries. So what the heck is going on? You add that up, consumers, American consumers, pay $116 billion more per year for the same drugs as people in other countries are getting. That needs to be addressed. Needs to be addressed. And if we have time, we could touch on Mexico. This is significant. We're getting some progress on labor rights in Mexico. Over the past couple of years, there have been attempts to address Mexico's broken labor law system to no avail. Well, the Biden administration has made some progress on this. A historic agreement between the Biden administration and the Mexican government is aimed at providing the workers, and they're talking about a specific facility here. It's the General Motors Silao facility in Mexico, and this is all about providing the workers the ability to vote on whether to approve their collective bargaining agreement under free and democratic conditions. The agreement lays out a series of commitments negotiated by the parties to address serious rights violations that occurred during a vote in April. The agreement also sends a clear signal that workers' fundamental rights on both sides of the border will no longer be ignored and are the focal point of our trade agenda. Now, here's what happened. April 20th, workers at the GM facility in Silao were denied their right to a free and fair election. And when the Protection Union, it's different than what we have in the United States, the Confederation of Mexican Workers, was caught red-handed destroying ballots. This and other irregularities resulted in the Mexican government calling the vote null and void, and they're filing criminal charges. A new vote is scheduled to take place on August 20th, and this agreement is an important step toward ensuring workers in Silao will no longer be subject to such abuses. Rich Trumka, president of the AFL-CIO, hailed this, and he said this announcement is a major step in addressing the egregious violations of worker rights, especially at that GM plant. So that's certainly good news. Again, Biden administration working through this one and making positive changes there. Well, we'll see what happens in August. After a devastating heat wave in which at least one farm worker, an immigrant from Guatemala, died among the 100-plus temperatures, the Oregon Occupational Safety and Health Administration has adopted emergency rules to protect workers from the heat in the Pacific Northwest. It's still hot there. The temporary rule will stay in effect for 180 days, while the Oregon OSHA works on a permanent rule. Now, the rule requires that employers, when the heat index is equal or above 80 degrees Fahrenheit, that they provide employees with access to shade and drinking water that is free for employees. Additionally, when the heat index reaches 90 or above, employers must monitor employees for alertness and signs and symptoms of heat illness and provide workers with a 10-minute cool-down period in the shade for every 2 hours of work. So I salute the Oregon Occupational Safety and Health Department for taking the lead on this. This needs to be done right away. I know the administration is looking at this in Washington. We talked about this last week. They weren't planning on doing anything until October. Well, hey, that's fall. This is definitely a matter for the states, especially with the emergency standard. 8 employees and the general manager of a Burger King in Nebraska resigned on Monday. In another recent example of food industry workers showing a refusal to work in horrible conditions. Check this out. The restaurant was chronically understaffed, forcing Rachel Flores, the general manager who quit, to work about 60 hours per week. Burger King forced employees to work without air conditioning in the summer heat. The kitchen apparently registered a temperature of over 90 degrees on one day. The heat forced Flores to go to the hospital with dehydration, after which management called her a baby. Oh, what are you complaining about? The workers who quit got the last laugh with an instant classic post on the sign outside the restaurant. This was all in caps. We all quit. Sorry for the inconvenience. Again, this was a Burger King in Nebraska this week. Now let's go to Texas. Oh, boy. In a last-ditch effort to block the passage of a Republican-spearheaded voter suppression law, a group of Texas House Democrats fled the state this week and went to Washington, D.C. That's where they're camped out. The exodus denies the GOP a quorum it needed to operate the legislature and pass their desired voting restrictions. Well, the Democrats intend to stay outside the state until a special legislative session called by Governor Greg Abbott for the purpose of passing the voting restriction ends on August 6. Now, when they arrived in D.C., the delegation, again, these are the Texas Democrats, they called on their federal counterparts to pass voter protection laws like the For the People Act, which would preempt the GOP's efforts to pass restrictive voting laws in Texas and other states. I believe about 13 or 14 states have already passed such laws. Our democracy is on the line. That comment from Representative Trey Martinez Fisher. The move is something of a work stoppage, she said. By leaving the state, a group of lawmakers is making it impossible for the state legislature to function, and that's just what's going to stay. Republicans are portraying their colleagues as lazy government employees, shirking their duty to serve the public. The governor said the Democrats' decision to break the quorum of the legislature and abandon the Capitol inflicts harm on every Texan elected to serve. Abbott also threatened to use an age-old tactic of strike-breaking, using armed law enforcement to physically force the lawmakers back to work. That's what he's apparently thinking about. He said the Democrats will be corralled and cabined in the Capitol until his desired voter suppression law is passed. Boy, this is like the Wild Wild West. Now, it's not clear how the GOP plans to force the delegation back to Austin because the state police have no jurisdiction in D.C. Federal law enforcement agencies say they're not going to get involved. Chris Turner, one of the Democrats who fled the state, fought back against the characterization that the Democrats are lazy. He said, hey, we're doing our job. We were elected to represent our constituents and fight for our constituents' interests. We're not going to sit in Austin in the House chamber and watch the Republican majority steamroll the voting rights of our very own constituents. What a story happening right now in the heart of America. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Wayne Cressup on behalf of the ironworkers.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook. That's AWF Union Podcast. And follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Area Labor Federation, all connected to the AFL-CIO. In fact, Pat Gallagher, on behalf of the Labor Federation, he'll be joining us tomorrow. Right now, though, let's join Wayne Cressup, no stranger to this show, and he is with the Ironworkers, one of the many proud sponsors of America's Workforce. Wayne is a district rep for the Safety and Health Department, and recently it was announced that he is one of 15 people that have been appointed to a group, an advisory committee, for construction safety and health. So important for the trades. Wayne, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today, brother.
Hey, Flash, great to be on the show. Thank you again for having me.
Well, quite an honor for you to be appointed on behalf of the Labor Department. It's good to have a Labor Secretary like Marty Walsh there. He understands what the building trades need, and safety is obviously number one. Why don't you fill us in on this advisory committee and tell us, has there been any meetings yet? What's the story here, Wayne?
Yeah, thanks, Flash. Sure. So the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, Federal OSHA, has an advisory committee on construction safety and health, known as ACOSH. And as you mentioned, it's got a 15-member panel. There's representatives from employers, from employee representatives, of which the iron workers and a number of other trades are represented, and then some public members, and also then a couple of state plans and NIOSH are also represented on the Advisory Committee for Construction Safety and Health. And what's really cool about this group is that they are involved at any time that OSHA is looking at making policy changes or making new standards that will impact the construction industry. They are required to consult with ACOSH before they actually move forward with any of those activities. So it's a pretty big honor to be one of the 15 people a part of that group. And the ACOSH committee usually meets 2 to 4 times a year. So we just received an announcement that our first meeting is going to be a virtual meeting, of course, in today's times. Hopefully we'll be back to in-person meetings here at some point. But our first meeting will be held on Wednesday, August the 11th, from 1 to 5 p.m. And it'll be a virtual program. And so far the agenda for it will have probably an opening with the Acting Assistant Secretary of Labor for OSHA, some updates and remarks. And then we'll have usually the Directorate of Construction is our liaison with the agency that works very closely with the advisory committee. And we'll get an update from the Directorate of Construction. And we also anticipate that there will be some discussion with OSHA on the what they call the focused 4 hazards for the construction industry, which those are the hazards that have a tendency to seriously injure or kill. And believe it or not, statistically, going back and looking at the injury data, that usually impacts about 90% of the injuries or fatalities that we have in the construction industry are related to these focus 4 hazards, which are falls, struck by, caught in between, and electrical hazards. So If we can gear everything towards that, we can help eliminate a large chunk of the serious injuries or fatalities just by honing in on that. And then the other thing that will be happening is usually ACOSH has some different work groups, and we haven't received our assignments for those work groups yet. So we'll probably have some discussion and probably we'll start working in those work groups. And then it wraps up usually with a public comment period. So it should be a very insightful meeting, and it will help probably lay the foundation for what I'm hoping to be a very active next few years in working with the advisory committee and seeing what we can do to help improve safety and health for our construction workers, not just the iron workers, but all the trades and the crafts around the country.
So, Wayne, when this is all said and done and you come up with their recommendations, will these recommendations be something that the contractors have to adhere to? Would it be a voluntary thing or just a recommendation? Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. We'll have, you know, typically, depending on which way the agency is looking at focusing their attention, you know, sometimes it can be on an enforcement side. Other times it may be involved in maybe looking at some of the different training aspects, and otherwise it may also be some compliance assistance, again, depending on which direction the agency wants to go. If it's a new standard, something that's relatively new and is fresh and people aren't really familiar with it, they might start out maybe with a little bit of compliance assistance and education to kind of help raise the level of awareness, and then the enforcement will come after that, you know, once everyone's had a chance to kind of digest it and understand what their roles and responsibilities are in helping to protect America's workers. So it'll, you know, a lot of times it'll vary. There may be some policy decisions on how they might want to, you know, conduct their enforcement that they might want to bounce off of the advisory committee. Now, the thing to remember, though, this is an advisory committee. So even though they may run it by the committee, it's still up to OSHA to choose whether or not they accept or reject the committee's recommendations. You know, we can certainly have a lot of influence, but that ultimate decision will still rest with the agency.
Wayne, all I can say, it's good to have a union brother calling the shots, and I'm talking about Marty Walsh, because Marty Walsh comes from the building trades. He's got political experience. We know that. He was the mayor of Boston for many, many years. He worked with Democrats, Republicans. He dealt with unions all his life. But to have somebody like this calling for an advisory committee, in my opinion, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners, this speaks volumes. It really does. So I am looking forward to hearing more out of this committee, and I'm sure we'll be talking about that in a future show. I want to switch gears here a little bit. I came across a story, and I want to get into infrastructure, and this involves a bridge over the Mississippi River, which used to connect Tennessee and Arkansas. Major bridge. It's the I-40 bridge. Well, a couple of weeks ago, they found out that the bridge had a massive crack in one of the beams, and the bridge has since been shut down. Well, the iron workers, and Eric Dean, president of the iron workers, came out and said, you know what? We have a problem here. We have a problem with our infrastructure. And that being said, Eric and the entire iron workers are urging Congress to get on the bandwagon here and fix our bridges and do it right away. And this is part of the American Jobs Plan. And as you know, Wayne, it's changed a little bit. There's this bipartisan deal. It's not as comprehensive as to what Biden wanted to do. I believe he had like $2.2 trillion. This one is $1.2 trillion. But let's talk about infrastructure here. And this is just one of the many wake-up calls. It's a good thing that that bridge did not fall down. But there is a history in America of bridges falling down. And there is warnings of various bridges falling down. Is that your pet kind of a is he upset about the infrastructure too, Wayne?
Yeah, he is geared up and ready to go after it to try to get these roads and bridges built and rebuilt.
Well, it sounds like he's calmed down a little bit, so that's good news. So Wayne, let's talk about infrastructure. I mean, the iron workers know firsthand that there's a lot of cracks out there. There's a lot of cracks, and there's a lot of cracks we're not even aware of. So moving forward, what's the point of view, especially with this bipartisan plan? Go ahead.
Well, I anticipate that that we'll probably have, even in ACOSH, in our work groups, that we'll probably have some discussion on what's going to be happening with infrastructure, because if this actually goes through, that's not only going to mean, hopefully, you know, we talk about safety and health in the construction industry, but that's also safety for our motoring public. And as you mentioned, you know, we've had a number of different, unfortunately, bridge collapses as a result of our crumbling infrastructure. And hopefully this will help to increase the safety for motorists around the country. In addition to that, you know, we again, with our role in ACOSH, we anticipate that this is going to probably mean, you know, obviously more construction jobs, which means we're going to need to have more people in the industry. And if that is more people to the industry, that's also going to be new people to the industry, which will then mean that they're going to need some training. They're going to need to know what their skills and their roles are in being able to perform the work. And that's also going to lead to an awareness of the hazards that we're going to have to help protect them to for their own safety and health when they are doing that work. So it kind of goes full circle with that. Obviously, you know, these bridges, unfortunately, I think the motoring public would be shocked to learn, you know, all of the different, you know, there's the thousands of bridges across the country that are in dire need of repair. And if you happen to be driving and you see a weight reduction or a weight restriction on that bridge, that means that it's been inspected and it's probably not, if it's been reduced in its capacity, there's a reason for that. And it means it's not going to be able to support the weight of the loads as it goes over that bridge. So, again, those are good warning signs that tell us that we need to do something more to help bring those bridges back up to par. And obviously, that's a lot of work. And that also means that, you know, we also, with our infrastructure, that we're getting into, you know, other parts of transit and airport possibly work. And, you know, even getting into, I've seen some things here talking about broadband internet, especially in rural communities. And so I would hope that that would also come around. I think if nothing else with the pandemic, it's taught us that even those in the remote areas of the country still need to have that access to high-speed internet. And I think it's going to be just as important as making sure we have the power grid up to speed and also having, you know, water and heat in our homes. I think having internet capability is also going to be a big part of that.
And Wayne, you know, the big controversy here is how to pay for it. They don't want to raise taxes, but, you know, they have to understand something. We're paying for it now. When you're stuck because the roads are not up to snuff, you're wasting gas. When you hit a chuck hole, there's repairs on your vehicle that you have to take care of. You mentioned the broadband. There's a lot of kids that are not getting access to the information that they need to know to do their schoolwork. I mean, there's so many things that are really dragging us down, and it's sad that our lawmakers have not picked up on this because they just can't seem to see eye to eye on this issue. I mean, we've had so many discussions on this show, and the American Society of Civil Engineers, you know that group, for many, many, many years, they have come forward and said our infrastructure, they've given us a D. I think they upgraded it because some states have spent some money on it, but it's like a C- right now. That's not acceptable. It's really not acceptable. I mean, we're not a third world nation. We need to move on this. So I don't know. With the bipartisan support, I'm just wondering. I know you're in safety and health, but I just got to pick your brain a little bit. With the fact that this is a bipartisan agreement, and some are calling this a down payment on a bigger plan, what's your gut telling you? I mean, you've been in with the iron workers all your life here. Talk to me about that part.
Well, you know, I'm really hoping, you know, that this will be the I think with what we saw with that condo collapse down in Florida, that that this will maybe also serve as a wake up call. We had the bridge collapse up in Minnesota years ago that unfortunately it resulted in a significant loss of life of again, our motoring public, which also spurred the development of Cleveland's Interbelt Bridge because it was a similar structure. And when they, again, were doing the inspection of that, found that there were a lot of problems. So I think that, you know, just like in the world of safety and health, you know, we never have enough time to go and do it right until something happens. And then all of a sudden we find all the time and resources to be able to take a step back and go, yeah, well, if we do this and we make a couple of changes here, then we can make it happen. And unfortunately, you know, I hate to say it, but, well, you know, with some of these tragedies, that's usually the kick in the seat that we need to try to help make something happen. And unfortunately with our lawmakers, that also ends up being a, I don't want to say a crutch, but a motivator to kind of help get them moving in the right direction. And I would hope to see that, you know, that we would actually get something moving along this without having any tragedies and take advantage of this and identify some of the large projects, the bridges that really need are in the worst shape that we need to have. And there's so many reasons for it. Obviously, you know, I mentioned our motoring public, but we also, you know, as part of that infrastructure, we need to get goods and services, you know, around the country, across state lines. And that's a big part of, you know, we count on all those deliveries to end up getting to our homes. And, you know, if that's not there, then again, we've missed our mark. So I'm hoping that our lawmakers will see that, will recognize the value and the benefit of it. And as you mentioned, Flash, yeah, we pay for it in other ways. So why not be proactive and get these things taken care of up front?
All right, Wayne, I got to take a quick break. Wayne Cressup, he is the district rep for the Safety and Health Department of the Ironworkers, ironworkers.org. Wayne, I want to talk about apprentices. I know you want to get into that. And that and more, also the standard for rigger and signal person qualification. I know that's something I need some explaining on. I need an iron worker on that one, and that would be you. Desiree Hoffman will be joining us later in the show on behalf of the UAW, also a sponsor of the show, and she's going to get into the high cost of drugs, and she's also going to talk about the American Rescue Plan and the American Jobs Plan. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And we are available on 5 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find them online at oh.aft.org. Let's go back to our live line. Rejoin Wayne Cressup on behalf of the ironworkers. We're talking about infrastructure, the need to pass legislation. And right now we have a bipartisan bill to the tune of $1.2 trillion, not as much as what Biden wanted in the American Jobs Plan. And as I indicated so many times on this show, many are saying this is going to be a down payment. Let's get what we can done now and then build on that. Makes a lot of sense. All right, Wayne, in order to move forward with this, we need people in the iron workers, in the building trades. We need we need a lot of people. There's a lot of job opportunities. I want you to speak to the apprenticeship programs, and they are great programs. I mean, they're akin to a college program, 4 years. Some of them are 5 years. You earn while you learn. What are you hearing about the apprenticeship programs? Let's start with the iron workers. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Thanks, Flash. And yeah, you know, that's one of the things that is one of the greatest things about being a part of the building trades and seeing the apprenticeship programs that are popped up that are all over the country. And the training that that men and women receive out of these different apprenticeship programs is just phenomenal. And you mentioned it as far as the infrastructure that's creating jobs. And the cool part about getting into a union apprenticeship program is that this helps set you on a path that it's not just a job. This is a career opportunity. This is something that'll take you through your entire life and working career to build on. And then the iron workers, whether that's going to be a as part of the steel erection activities of being an erector or even working as a rod worker or a welder or a fabricator, there's plenty of opportunities there in the ironworking apprenticeship programs to be able to do that. And obviously with that training, there's a heavy emphasis on the safety and health aspects to where you learn how to do it right out of the gate through that apprenticeship program. And that's a great skill that you have that you can use, you know, on and off the job. You know, we have a lot of people that may actually have other parts that, you know, when they go off the job, they may want to work on other things. And the knowledge and the skills that they've got through their apprenticeship program help give them that foundation to be able to work on some of those other projects that they want to take on. You know, and as you mentioned, you know, going through a 3, 4, 5 year program, these individuals will get college credit toward an associate's degree. And, you know, by the time that they graduate, and if they want to at some point feel like they want to go back to school, maybe they want to become, you know, an engineer or actually go and get a business degree and go into business for themselves and become a contractor. Or maybe they work their way up through the ranks of their local union and become an officer in their local union. You know, there's tremendous opportunity by simply starting out and going through that apprenticeship program. We even have a number of people that, you know, may have tried other, you know, different career paths and found out, well, you know what, that really wasn't for me. They may have had some student loan debt and then ended up coming back into the apprenticeship and found out, wow, this is a great opportunity. I don't have to pay off any student loans here by going through a bona fide apprenticeship program. And the other part of this is that you know, there's guaranteed pay raises every 6 months. You know, as you go through it and you work your way up, you get that pay raise. And you know, again, for men and women, minorities, it's the same based on that hourly rate. Can you get the job done and do it in that time frame? And you know, it's a pretty cool thing to see that equity in those pay scales. You know, we hear about that all the time about you know, women making 70% of that of men, and you know, again, coming through the building trades, you know, it helps keep things equal there. And it's a pretty special part of it. The other thing that's part of the best kept secret is as you go through this, you know, you have benefits. You know, you're working, you get health care that's provided for you, and you're also working toward a pension and having a retirement plan. So obviously on the safety and health side, we're doing what we can to help try to make sure that people, our tradespeople are healthy and safe as they go through their career. So that way, when they get to that retirement age, they can enjoy that pension that they've worked so hard to earn.
Wayne, I want to talk a little bit about the skills when you go through those apprenticeship programs. And I caught this on your website. Again, it's ironworkers.org. A lot of contractors and many states and municipalities have requested or required a qualified rigger and signal person certification, and that's something you would get when you complete those programs. Now, let's talk about that. Can you explain what a qualified rigger is all about and the certification process? Can you get into that?
Sure, absolutely. So back in 2010, OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, came out with Subpart CC, which is their a new crane and derrick standard for construction. And in that standard, it called for a qualified evaluator to ensure that the rigger or signal person is qualified to carry out the required tasks on the job. And back then, in 2011, OSHA put out a letter of interpretation to our then general president, Walter Wise, that recognized apprenticeship programs as meeting the definition of that third-party qualified evaluator. However, one of the things that we've learned with OSHA is that those letters of interpretation are always subject, one, it's subject to interpretation, and it's subject to change. And so even though that that's the way that things are currently, that may not always be the case. So to try to help up the game and up our level of professionalism within the iron workers, our training apprenticeship and training department, headed by Executive Director of Training and Apprenticeship Lee Worley, they put together a rigor and signal person certification to help raise the bar with this. And so their department has put together this training program, and it also has a lot of eligibility criteria here that includes 6,000 hours of rigging-related experience. Then they have to complete a three-part exam, and they have to be recertified by full testing every 5 years. So it's a pretty comprehensive program that's been set up, and again, it helps raise the bar so that we have this. Now, one of the other elements that comes up, just like you mentioned, is that a lot of contractors and states, municipalities, we also have a lot of owner clients that when you go to work at their facilities, they want something a little bit more than that qualified rigor, you know, that evaluator that's checked the boxes. And so this helps, again, for us, check those boxes by having that qualified rigor and signal person certification. And so it far exceeds the minimum criteria of the OSHA standard and the letter of interpretation that came out. And I anticipate that we're going to have a lot of our iron worker members taking this course all over North America to take advantage of that.
I see that this is being sponsored by the Partnership Impact, which is a partnership between the iron workers and the contractors. And the bottom line, I in three words, I think you can explain this real easily. It's raising the bar. That's what this is all about. Raising the bar. Everybody wants to be safe on the job, and this is a good indication of how that's going to be accomplished. And especially when you mentioned the 6,000 hours of experience. Wow! I mean, there's a lot of components that go into this. A lot of training. And very hands-on. So that is a good thing. We want to protect our workers and the community that those workers work in. So it's all good. Wayne Cressup, who is a district rep for the Safety and Health Department of the Iron Workers. You can find more at ironworkers.org. You stay safe and keep in touch with. I want to get a conversation going with you when you have that first meeting in August. So let's schedule something maybe in September, and I'm sure you'll give us an earful after that, okay?
I truly look forward to it, Flash, and I'm going to send you information that we have on one of our Iron Worker Impact Safety and Health Roundtables, which will be taking place next week, and hopefully if you have some time, you can join us.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much. You take care.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here. Desiree Hoffman is with the UAW, that's the United Auto Workers, UAW.org, and she's coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac?
If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two, and welcome to the show. It's been a while. Desiree Hoffman is with the Legislative Department of the UAW, one of the many proud sponsors of this show. UAW.org is their website, and Desiree has informed me we have some breaking news here regarding the American Jobs Plan, which deals with our infrastructure, something we just got off the phone with Wayne Cressup of the Iron Workers. Desiree, welcome back to the show. Hey, what's the story here? What's going on?
Thanks for having me. Yes, there was some breaking news overnight. Over the last couple of weeks, Congress was out, the Senate and the House were out for July 4th recess. But while they were out, there was a lot of negotiation happening behind the scenes on a budget resolution. And that budget resolution, that top number was the item that was really under discussion. And it looks like an agreement was made for the top line number to be $3 trillion. And the idea is that many provisions that the UAW supports, and many others as well, will move through this budget resolution. Because as you recall, the infrastructure package that President Biden worked on with moderate Republicans and Democrats in the Senate is a scaled down version of what he originally proposed for his Build Back Better agenda. And so that infrastructure package includes things like upgrading our nation's grid, electrifying our school buses, thousands of them, creating these EV electric vehicle charging stations. And so That's pretty big news, but it could fall apart at any point here.
Okay, Desiree, so it sounds like, and I've heard this for the last couple of weeks, when they did this bipartisan deal, the $1.2 trillion deal, that was more or less going to be a down payment. So
correct.
I guess that's what's happening right now. They're going to start with that and then build from it. Am I hearing this correctly?
That's exactly right. So the idea is that they build from that $1.2 trillion package and build on that and include other infrastructure or social infrastructure ideas in the other package. So that could be everything from college tuition, making sure that's free for people, or paid family and medical leave, or expanded child care tax credits that will eventually run out. Also, our drug pricing reforms could potentially be in that package as well.
Interesting. Yeah, I want to get into that as well. I'm just wondering here, you know where the Republicans are. They don't want Biden to succeed, and I'm just wondering, you know how Mitch McConnell is. He is with the party of no. With that being said, how do you feel about some progress on this issue?
Yeah, so there's potentially some progress here, but it's pretty wobbly at the moment. The bipartisan group of senators are feeling a bit wobbly right now on even the infrastructure package because of the pay-fors. Some of the agreements that they made were around the IRS enforcement or using unused COVID funds. So it's a little bit shaky. So, you know, time is of the essence here. We'll see how that's going to pan out. But we are seeing some of those members breaking off of the originally negotiated idea framework.
Okay. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the IRS because I had that story maybe 2 months ago where the commissioner said that there's like $1 trillion uncollected right now because they really hollowed out the IRS over the years. And it's not just Trump. It goes back years. A lot of people that were working in the IRS were not replaced and they just cut the budget and cut it and cut it. And as a result, there's a lot of, and you know, look at the big corporations that aren't paying taxes today. There's something wrong. But if they started, if they started collecting taxes, maybe we could get our infrastructure fixed. And $1 trillion, yeah, we're talking a whole lot of money here. Well, that's interesting. What's going on? Well, I'm sure you're in the middle of it all, and we'll get an update as we go along. Let's talk about the drug pricing reform, and I tell you, for the life of me, I can't figure it out why Americans pay so much more than people in other countries. And what now, the pharmaceuticals, are they still saying that they're doing the research? Is that what's going on?
Yes, they're saying that it takes a lot of money to innovate, and that it takes a lot of money to produce these life-saving drugs, and that, you know, this is going to be difficult for them to achieve and to, you know, make sure that we drive down the cost of prescription drugs. But your belief is the same belief that Republicans, independents, and Democrats have right now in terms of supporting lower drug prices. A recent poll, I think it was Protect Our Care, released a poll that said 89% of Republican voters, 89% of independents, and almost 100% of Democrats think that Medicare should be given the power to negotiate lower prices for people, so they have lower drug prices, and even those with private insurance. And so that's widely popular. Some have said it's even more popular than getting infrastructure done, but we want to see both done, obviously.
yeah, absolutely.
And then the other thing is that's interesting, as you know, one third of the Senate is up every 6 years. And those who have been polled in some of those battleground states are saying 20 to 30% of constituents are saying that they can't even afford their prescription drugs in those key battleground states. So it's definitely a big issue for them.
You mentioned Medicare should be able to negotiate, and you're talking about Part D when they added prescription drugs. And I recall Bush being in office back then. Didn't they stipulate that they cannot negotiate? Am I correct in saying that?
That's correct. Correct. Under current law, the government cannot negotiate prescription drugs, lowering the cost of prescription drugs. And that's what we're trying to do. With the Lower Drug Costs Now Act, H.R. 3, that passed Congress in the last session of Congress, that would give HHS, Javier Becerra, who's the new HHS secretary, the power to negotiate the cost of high-priced drugs. And so right now we're working in the Senate. We've turned our attention over to the Senate, where Chairman Wyden introduced a framework that actually basically says, yes, we should have legislation that allows the government to negotiate the cost of prescription drugs. And that's a big deal, because in the previous session of Congress, he worked with, in a bipartisan fashion, with Grassley, and that bill did not have drug price negotiation at all. So we've been talking to senators and saying, look, not only do we need drug price negotiation, but we need a really robust number of drugs that the government should be able to negotiate, because we can't bring that back to our membership and say, hey, look, we have drug price negotiation, but it's only for 50 drugs per year. The government can and should do more for American people who are struggling to make ends meet.
Yeah, I don't know if you know this, but I remember, I've been doing the show since 1998, and I remember the representative who negotiated that part where it was stipulated that Medicare cannot negotiate for drug pricing. And he left Congress and worked for the pharmaceutical industry right after that. So,
oh, really? I mean, doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, there's a clear example here. And as far as the pharmaceutical lobby, aren't they like one of the largest lobbies in Washington today? Isn't it something like that?
They are. They're one of the biggest lobbies, and they've actually increased their number of lobbyists right after the Lower Drug Cost Now Act was actually introduced and passed into law in the last session of Congress, because they realized how popular this is among constituents, and polling after poll has said that this is one of the top priorities that people want to see happen in Congress. I should also mention, you know, at the top of the show, we talked about the new top line number for the budget resolution. It looks like, and we don't have details yet, but it looks like that they want to direct some of those savings towards dental, vision, and hearing benefits for seniors. So that gives me some inclination that some of these drug price reforms might be in that budget resolution. So, you know, stay tuned, because I think that's really some good progress in the right direction, because this drug pricing bill that we've been pushing for saves billions of dollars. So we could use that money and inject it back into the healthcare system to help seniors and to help people who need better healthcare coverage. So this is going to be an exciting next couple of months here. So hold on to your seat.
I'm ready. I love it. UAW.org for more information. Desiree, great job. Thank you so much. Stay safe. We'll talk down the road, all right?
Thanks so much. Have a good one.
All right. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the latest from the Nation and the North Coast Labor Federation. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.